Tēnā
Kia ora, Tami. Nice to have you on the show tonight. You're going to
Nice to
talk.
be on the show.
No, we're going to talk to you about biosecurity. Now, I find it a bit hard to get my head around what biosecurity is, and I'm sure some of our other listeners may feel the same way too. So, can you give us a bit of an explanation about what biosecurity is? How does it impact us?
Yeah, sure thing. I reckon, though, you probably do have a good idea given the current state that we're in with COVID. Biosecurity is pretty much just protecting what we care about from unwanted impacts of pests and diseases.
Gotcha.
So COVID falls right into the realm of biosecurity. However, biosecurity that we talk about is pests and diseases. Anything that affects humans, we throw that away over to Ministry of Health and stuff like that. So for us, for my part, I normally focus on the pest parts, the possums, rats and stoats, and
Oh, got you.
managing them. But the biosecurity system does cover things like bovine tuberculosis, coady dieback, myrtle rust, which are sort of quite frequently in the news. But like I said before, with everyone now aware of COVID and the jargon within the biosecurity system, my job is so much easier. When I talk about disease management, limiting the spread, tracing, people just know what I'm talking about now. So, yeah, it's made life easier for me.
It's amazing how quickly we've learnt this other language, eh? Just through our experiences over the last couple of years, you know. And the 'cause when I think about it, I remember watching border security, and so seeing stuff come through the border where people check out seeds, and yes, you can have that come through, and no, you can't bring fruit through, you can't, you know, all that sort of stuff. So it's along those lines too, isn't it?
Exactly. And what's taken me a lifetime to learn, people have learned within a few news, watching a few of the news items. The biosecurity system, though, it extends from pre-border. So when we talk with our trading partners, say, hey, don't bring that stuff over here, or in the COVID space, hey, if you want to come back to Aotearoa, you need to have ABC. And you're right, at the border, that's what people normally think of, is you can't bring apples into Aotearoa, you can't bring honey, right through to when things are established here. So like I said, I'm down that end of the spectrum. I'm a possum trapper. Possums have been here since 1850, and we're still dealing with them. But anything that does make it through the pre-border, gets through the border, and does get established here, that goes into sort of my realm where we figure out how we can deal with it.
Possums have been here since 1850. That blows my mind a little bit because, I mean, they're a huge pest. How much would you say you kind of eradicate through your job?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer. I don't know about numbers. Essentially, though, a lot of my work is just putting a bucket of water on a bushfire. But with the government initiative of eradicating them by 2050, there is some light at the end of the tunnel. But what we focus on isn't about actually just eradicating them or killing them, because it's pretty hard to eradicate them with the current tools we have. It's more so making sure that we get rid of enough of them that they don't have a negative impact on the forest. So our plants can grow back, our birds can successfully breed. So it's more about the impacts that they have at this stage. But that long-term goal of, total eradication is, the mecca for me.
By 2050, do you think that's doable?
Oh, yeah, I do think it's doable. I mean, we could do it right now if we wanted to. They could just nuke everything with 1080 or cyanide, but that wouldn't go down well with just about everyone, I think. So we do need to build some social license and get everyone on board. But my research, for my part in it, you heard the saying, if you want to learn a new lesson, read an old book. I'm looking at mātauranga can help inform or guide our current pest management practices. And what I've found is just by using traditional practices that our tupuna probably used to catch manu, if we retrofit those to catch possums, we get about a 14% increase in trap catches plus a decrease in costs. So, yeah, maybe mātauranga is the key to
Well, that's,
helping us achieve it.
I mean, that sounds like a, you know, a bit of a dream, doesn't it? That's like that. That's got to be the ultimate process where it costs less to carry out and you increase your trappings. So, talk to us a little bit, Tamia, about mātauranga Māori way of trapping and how that comes into play.
Well, everyone's probably aware of Rangi Mātāmua, and the Maramataka, how he's revitalising the knowledge around Maramataka. What we've found is that for each marama, each month or moon or lunar cycle, our tūpuna had different food sources. So in February, for instance, they would harvest kia ora when the kia ora would try chase the cicadas. So that gave me the first inkling of how I could adapt it. We know that rats also chase the cicadas, so I started setting all my rat traps around the trees where the cicadas were. So what I did was I set two normal lines of traps as the standard practice or the industry practice, but the third line I set to chase these rats that were eating cicadas. The next month was the kahikatea berries. And so I moved all my traps to the kahikatea berries while I still continued the other two lines following industry practices. So each month I found the new food source that our tūpuna would look for, and I targeted those knowing that that's where the rats and possums would likely go. And yeah, early indications were like, blew everything out of the water on my assumptions.
And so you're recording all of this. That's part of the plan.
Yeah, well, the first, because I'm doing my PhD in this,
Ah,
but
got you.
that first one was just, I was just having a titi. It was during a February lockdown here in Auckland, and I thought, bugger this, I'm going to go do some trapping. And then I'd always been sitting on this cattle. So me and I took my 2-year-old son out, and we started having a go at it. And when I realised I was perhaps onto a win, I started recording everything. And since then, I've just been giving talks and trying to basically get the message out there that, hey, maybe actually we should look at this. The second thing I started doing as well is, we lug all these big traps into the bush. They're heavy. I can carry 40 traps at a time, and that's pretty much me. But what I found is that you can easily make a decent rat trap that meets industry standards. All you need is a knife and some cord. And you can perhaps make the cord while you're up there, but to save time, I found that, if you just take a cord and a knife, you can make a trip while you're up there. And so that's the next goal over the summer, is to see how well the efficiencies can be if you just use homemade
Yes.
traps or bush-made traps, I should say.
Yeah. Because I guess it is looking for those tools that are, like you're saying, our tūpuna use, which kind of, kept the iwi fed in a way, really. There has to be some sort of, there's got to be sort of, if we look forward to our times now, there has to be some use for those traditional, gosh, I can't even think of the word, but those traditions, we have to bring them forward. We have to start looking at those ways, especially because they're environment friendly, I guess. That's part of it too. Like you say, laying down, 1080 and things like that. I remember the last time that was kōrero out in our community, and like you say, it didn't go down too well. So we can't keep doing things like that. We have to look for other ways, don't we?
And you're right, when this mātauranga, this knowledge, was developed over centuries, and it needed to be robust and accurate for the survival of our tūpuna. They wouldn't have just sort of had a crack at something and, hope for the best. They knew that these things had to work. So therein lies the essential principles of mātauranga, that it's worked, it's been refined. We just need to revitalize it. Going back to the other kaupapa though, 1080, I do find it interesting. What set me off on the PhD approach was I run a trapping business, and all I've done is trapping. But I'm one of those few, probably Māori, that hunt as well, that pig hunt, that support 1080. And I got a lot of flack for it. And when people say, oh, it's against our tikanga and it's against our kaua, that's what I thought. I'm not a researcher, by the way. I was a dock ranger for 8 years and been in the bush working most of my life. And so I started looking at it and I couldn't find anything that said using the use of toxins is against our tikanga and our kaua. Our tupuna knew that the toxic properties of different plants and
Plants, yeah, I
knew
was just
how
going to
to use
say,
them.
yeah, aye.
So, yeah, how do we have that conversation of is it against our tikanga when there's evidence to say that our tupuna did use toxic plants to kill unwanted organisms?
Because it's, as you mentioned, possums, and we all know they're an introduced species here. And the other one that is kind of coming up, I just saw on the news a couple of days ago, are wallabies. That's another, they're becoming a pest now. And I didn't even know there were wallabies in Aotearoa. That was news to me.
And that's the funny thing is many people don't. I was unfortunate enough to grow up in, well, not grow up, but where I grew up, wallabies were rampant. Wallabies were released in Rotorua, Lake Okarika, in about 1912. Fast forward to about the early 90s, and I remember as a young kid, we used to get told to go sit up at the urupā with a pile of rocks and shoo away the wallabies so they wouldn't eat the flowers around the
Oh my
graves.
gosh, yeah.
And then I remember for a few decades now, our iwi, Ngāti Tarawhai, kept pushing local council and DOC and the government to do something about these wallabies. They were, destroying our ngahere. And there was a little bit of effort done here and there. It wasn't really until mountain bikers started coming across. They started falling off their bikes because wallabies were on the track and they couldn't
Yes.
brake fast enough, that we really started seeing some momentum gain. And so while we're happy to see some, something done about the wallabies, pretty gutted that it took, mountain bikers calling out for it
To be
rather than
something to
iwi
be
calling out
done.
for it.
Yeah, but do you
But in
think
saying that,
you could?
Our local council was really good at trying to address them.
Because I mean that's just going to get out of control, like the possums. I mean, it just takes a few in the country, and before you know it, it's their pests. And I think the other one that comes to mind are those mountain goats.
Oh, the tar.
Tar. That's what I was trying to think of the name of them. But that there you go. That's another pest. Who are not indigenous to Aotearoa, running over our maunga, and I think they're eradicating them by just, people going out and shooting them. And it's become a bit of a sport, I think. It's kind of held in that regard rather than the pests that they actually are.
Yeah. Oh, you're asking some good
I know,
questions
I'm
there,
just,
Mark,
it's all coming to,
because
it's all coming to mind for me as I'm sort of thinking through these things as you're talking.
I mean, you're totally right. There's essentially what it comes down to with pest management in Aotearoa, it isn't about the animal, it's the impact the animal is having. If the animal is having a negative impact on what we value, then it's a pest.
Ah, kia ora.
But if the animal is more valued than the impact, then obviously it's a resource. So when we look at deer or tar, for instance, we have a lot of people saying, oh, it's a resource, it's the taonga, not the plants that it's eating. But that's where we have to have a really hard conversation is do we protect this the species that is found elsewhere in the world in high numbers, or do we protect this thing that it's eating that is only found here in Aotearoa, that our tupuna used as rongoā, that we have whakapapa to. I tell you what, it's a hard conversation to have with some people because they get up in arms saying, nope, deer are our taonga,
And I
tar
think
are our taonga.
what you're pointing to is that's the difference in the kōrero from a mātauranga perspective, just from, or from, gosh, I can't even, you know, just from Western knowledge, I guess, the value placed on those two things are poles apart, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, and in the middle, perhaps, or what the common ground between them is, we have this hunting fraternity in Aotearoa saying, you know, it's part of our culture, it's part of our heritage and our legacy that we live to hunt. My father did this, my father's father did this. It's part of who we are.
Yes.
And on the same side, you've got Māori saying that actually these rongoā, they helped, or this, that ngahere helped shelter my tūpuna, fed them, protected them, nurtured them for, you know, almost 1,000 years type thing.
Aye.
So they're part of our culture. So you got the, you know, there's that similarity there, but we're talking about two different things. Introduced species and
two different cultures too, really, when you think about it, eh? But unfortunately,
exactly,
it's not us who is kind of running the show. Those species have been kept alive because of the dominant Western culture. Because, you know, it's that culture who want it for sport, who want it for, you know, who want to farm it, who want to do all those things and use a resource like our whenua in a different way to perhaps how we use it and how we perceive it, eh?
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And I mean, Aotearoa was one of the last arcs of biodiversity in the world. It was the last large landmass to be colonized or be settled. So we have this huge degree of endemic species, things that you'll never find elsewhere in the world.
Mm.
We've lost a significant amount already, given human impact.
Mm.
Let's protect what we've got, I reckon.
Yeah. What are some of those, Tami? Can you sort of tell us what some of those things that we've lost are?
Oh, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is the harst eagle, or the hokioi. You've probably heard of that. It was a giant eagle that was capable of lifting moa up. And we all know how big moa were.
Mm.
Imagine an eagle that could lift an ostrich or an emu off the ground, or capable of taking a sheep away. And that features in our corridor as well.
Mm.
And some of our, our kōrero tukuiho, they talk about taniwha that would fly from the sky, swoop down, pick children up and take them off.
Mm.
Early European settlers dismissed that as nonsense and fairy tales. But then when they found the talons of a harst eagle buried in the hip bones of moa, they thought, oh, actually, maybe there's a bit
of
truth.
Hang on a minute.
Kōrero.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Then, of course, we've got the moa.
Mm.
That research shows within 150 years of Māori arriving, they were no longer.
Mm.
And therein also lies another thing, when non-Māori use that sort of stuff against us, say, oh, you killed the moa, so Māori killed the moa.
Yeah.
And my first thing is, what purpose does that serve? But secondly, yes, our tūpuna did see the demise of the moa, but they embedded that lesson within our culture.
Mm.
The Māori kupu for extinction is mate mate a moa, and we developed things, with the extinction of the moa, we developed things like rahui, Māori rahui.
Oh, kia ora.
And a rahui, once a rahui was done, if anyone disturbed that rahui, they were the cost. You know, there was stories of people who broke the rahui to try catch it, feed, and were killed for it, to show, actually the environment is number one. We've seen the loss of species. We don't want that to happen again. It'll cost us. So we're quite happy to kill whoever's needed to keep the balance of the ecosystem.
Balance,
right.
Aye. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it, actually. Finding that equilibrium, I guess, that balance. As we're heading towards Christmas, Tami, what are some of the things we need to watch out for, do you think?
Yeah, so it's about this time of the year. I normally encourage everyone. We're looking forward to going on holiday, and we're heading out. So follow some biosecurity practices, or tikanga that is part of our culture, as I was just talking about. Stuff like cleaning your boots. If you're going for a hike, or your shoes, to make sure you're not taking things like toady dieback or myrtle rust in between forests. Making sure you, if you're going on a boat somewhere, that you're not carrying unwanted passengers like rats and mice to new islands. And you're also cleaning the bottom of your boat, so you're not taking any unwanted pesky critters like that. Also, if you are leaving your house for a few weeks, keeping an eye on your compost so you're not coming back to an infestation of rats or insects. Now's the time where I really encourage everyone to do some take care around biosecurity practices. What I will say this year, though, is due to lockdowns and people not being able to move as much as they normally have, I personally missed out on a season of trapping my mona. So that's already added some pressure to our mona. And I think there would be a few others around the country. Some places haven't been able to get, some forests haven't been able to get the work they require to get them ready for summer. So keeping on top of the rats and the unwanted organisms. So our environment's already under pressure. Now we've got everyone about to leave Auckland on December the 15th and rush straight to these spots. And I can imagine, you know, people won't be wanting to clean their boots and check their packs and all sorts. And it's just increasing that risk. So I do encourage everyone just to please, if you can, keep an eye on your packs and your boots and your equipment and give them a good clean and whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice because you're right, people will just be sort of want to take off and up and off and what have you. So that's actually good advice. As you said that, I kind of thought, well, I've never thought about doing that with, you know, stuff I sort of take around the countryside when I go away and things like that. You don't kind of think about it, do you? You just get on with it. And if you've been at home as long as we have, you still don't kind of think about, well, you know, I need to take things out and have a good shakedown and have a good clean before I take off anywhere, because that's the way bugs and things get transported around the Rohe, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm quite, I'm hoping, though, with that, with COVID, everyone's used to wearing face masks, signing and disinfecting their hands. So it's shown that we're quite capable of doing routines and practices that can help save us in the long run. Biosecurity is often, well, my part for it, is often described as the ambulance at the bottom of the hill. So once a disease gets in, we have to come, or a disease or a pest, we have to come in and manage it. But if we can take these simple steps beforehand that cost next to nothing, we can save ourselves millions of dollars. Like, if you think about how much Cody dieback is costing us, whereas you know, simply scrubbing your boots can easily stop the spread. If we had have done that right from day dot, we would have been in a far better, we would have, you know, saved us, the country, a lot of money, but also a lot of trees.
Yeah, a lot of trees, that's right. How far along in your PhD are you?
Still early days. So I am, super early days. But what got me into it is that my whole life I've just been doing pest control. That's all I've ever done. So I've got a phenomena of mine, Dr. Maria Bard. She's at Victoria University of Wellington.
Yes, I know Maria.
She kept encouraging me, saying, yeah, you should really look at this. And I thought, oh, you know, I'm not an academic. I prefer to get out in the bush and, you know, do some mahi that way rather than typing up stuff and theorising. But after, you know, after countless times of her encouraging me, I sat down and had a good chat with her and enrolled and put pen to paper, and I realised that, through osmosis of just being in the space for years, I sort of...
I can do this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the flashest of writers, and I need to work on my English. But, I'm still getting there, so hoping to have my first chapter done by January.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully I don't have to worry about coming out and trapping rats. So that's another reason I'm encouraging everyone to check their packs and stuff.
Yeah, but no, that's very encouraging. That's a great start, having a first chapter done by January, especially when you've got to kind of work your way through the Christmas break too. So, yeah, all the best on that, because it's not for the faint-hearted, that's for sure.
Yeah, I wish you'd told me that before I started this.
I'm too late now. You've even said it on Wāte, so you've got to keep going. But it's definitely an area, and especially how you're talking about it too from Mātauranga Māori perspective. It's definitely an area, and the environment is so important right now. Well, always has been really, but you know, it just seems to be on every forum, on every front at the moment. So we need experts in this area, eh?
Oh, 100%. Mm. And I've definitely found a lot of support, and there's a huge appetite for Mātauranga, for Mātauranga to be incorporated in environmental management, but also specifically for pest control.
Yes.
What I will say, though, is that I keep getting the rhetoric of people saying, you know, oh, we should incorporate Mātauranga, or can we take some Mātauranga and put it into this existing system? And I think, like, we're starting on the wrong foot.
Oh.
Mātauranga has evolved over, like I said, hundreds of years.
Yes.
Why isn't that the base?
Yeah.
And then we incorporate Western science when it's needed. Yeah, let's start with the strongest trump card, so to speak, and then build off that.
And build off that, not the other. And that's the problem, isn't it? We've been dropping things into that Western way of learning for far too long. So, yeah, well, your PhD is more than needed, I think, Tami. So, yeah, please keep that up. Please keep going with it. Good on you.
Thank you. Yeah, and I started with the whakatauke in my PhD, kore te uku e piri ki te rino. Clay will never stick to steel. Everyone's guilty of trying to brown things up, give it the brown tick, or just superimpose Mātauranga. But like I said, if we start with Mātauranga as the base, to address some of these issues, these complex issues we do have, we need to think differently. So.
Very much so.
Trying it that way.
We'll go back to old thinking.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tami, thanks for your time this evening and your very interesting kōrero. And as I say, good luck with your PhD. Keep going. That's the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, this conversation went different than I thought. So
same,
I really enjoyed it.
Same here. Oh, I'm glad you did. Nice to have you on our show tonight, and we hope to have you again then.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.